The divisional round of the NFL playoffs. Your host, as always, Adam Glass and Ryan Jones, breaking down all the action from coming up in four great games this weekend as we continue to move through the NFL playoffs. We also give you our take on what happened during last week's wildcard games and also some of the updates regarding NFL coaching and things of that nature going on around the league. As always, follow us on Twitter at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Fifth Down Podcast. And check out the website, it's fifthdown.org. Catch all of our latest episodes, latest blogs. You can throw any comments, questions, anything you want out there, and we'll either address it on the show or we'll be sure to throw it there on Twitter, whatever have you, however you want to communicate with us. We try to keep the show as interactive as possible. All right, immediately following last week's show, in which we broke down all the head coach firings and who was safe and who was not safe, Mike Munchak was one of the names who we said was probably going to remain with Tennessee. I think about 17 seconds after we booted the show, the Titans went ahead and parted ways with Mike Munchak over his refusal to make significant changes on his coaching staff. Basically, they wanted him to change OC or DC, whatever happens, and he was loyal to his guys. And so he is now in the market for a new job. Now, whether this is the right decision or wrong decision on part of Tennessee, what it tells me is that they are ready to move on from Jake Locker as well. To me, I think Munchak and Locker are kind of tied together. And so if you're going in a new direction in terms of a head coach, I think you're going in a new direction in terms of a quarterback. Whether you draft somebody who's going to start week one or who's going to sit for a few weeks or possibly sit for the year, I don't think that much makes a difference, but I definitely think Tennessee is going to target a quarterback in the draft or via free agency. And so you bring in a new coach with your new quarterback, you see what happens in training camp with a true competition. But I definitely think the Jake Locker experiment slash era is over in Tennessee as they look to bring in a new head coach and coaching staff as well.
My only response to that is it's kind of it's about time. I didn't think, you know, I didn't think that he brought them that much to the team. I think it was one of those cases where the where he looked better than he seemed just because they had a great run game at the time. And since, you know, CJ2K became CJ non-existent K.
CJ half K, as we like to call him.
The, you know, it's put a lot more pressure on Locker. And, you know, he hasn't lived up to all the hype, basically.
Yeah, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy. I mean, for a team that has a franchise quarterback or a guy who they deem to be a franchise quarterback, they've had somewhat of a revolving door in terms of the injuries. I mean, Jake Locker has seen plenty of time. Matt Hasselbeck has seen plenty of time before he moved on. This year, Ryan Fitzpatrick saw a good amount of time. So there's constantly been a revolving door in terms of the who's starting week to week because Locker has been unable to stay healthy. But a lot of times when he was healthy, he was still being outplayed or outshined by the number two on the depth chart. And I thought Ryan Fitzpatrick actually looked fantastic for the Titans this year. And he had them in position to make the playoffs up until, I believe it was week 15, maybe even week 16, when they were mathematically eliminated. But Fitzpatrick played very well. And he's a guy who plays very well when he's not supposed to. When he's the guy going into the season who's their quarterback and their starter and all the pressure rests on him, he doesn't do well. When somebody goes down, he has to come in and pick up the pieces, or there's no pressure on him to win because it's supposed to be just a rebuilding year. That's when he thrives. I mean, he's proven to be a pretty good quarterback in Buffalo. And again, this year in Tennessee, he got a good contract through Buffalo. And just once he got that money, things just fell apart when he realized that he was the guy and all the pressure was on him. It seems like he just wasn't able to handle it. But when he comes in as the backup and it's just kind of like, all right, do your thing and don't screw it up, that's when he puts up these crazy points. And I thought he made a case for himself to be a starter. I think he's burned those bridges too many times. And again, not to be redundant, but with the injuries to Locker, I definitely think Tennessee is looking to move in another direction and look again for that franchise QB. Munchak, did he have enough time? Did he have a fair shot? I don't know.
He had a good run.
He had a decent run. I mean, clearly they didn't give as much time as they did to Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher was there forever prior to Munchak. Munchak wasn't able to really duplicate the success that he had early. I don't remember if CJ's 2000-yard season was Munchak's first year, or if it was Jeff Fisher's final years. I think it was the beginning of the Munchak era when he had that success. And whether it's the fault of a running backs coach or CJ himself or offensive line or whatever it is, he hasn't been able to replicate that. There's been issues with the receiving core and Kenny Britt and off the field issues there. So they had issues with Corwin Finnegan and losing him. So there's definitely been a lot that's gone on with Tennessee. Despite all that, they're not a bottom feeder in the NFL. They're not one of those teams that you can just roll over. They've played pretty well most of the years that Munchak's been there. They haven't been a top five pick. So he's averted complete disaster with this team, but they haven't really made a playoff run in a division where it's been somewhat open. Texans were really good for a while. Colts have bounced back, but I mean, it's not a division that was won week 11, week 12. I mean, it's a division that really kept on going into week 13, 14, 15 most years. All right, let's move on from Munchak. Tennessee still interviewing a bunch of candidates, and we'll talk about some of the candidates a little later on. Jay Gruden has been hired as the next head coach in Washington. Of course, former offensive coordinator with the Cincinnati Bengals, guy who's really taking the charge in developing Andy Dolan and the offense up in Cincinnati. Now, Dan Snyder and general manager hired Gruden without any input from RG3. Gruden did not meet with him prior to getting the job. Still to this point, I don't, according to reports from Pro Football Talk and others, has not met with RG3. I respect that in a way, but I don't understand it. I mean, I feel like part of the Mike Shanahan firing was because of a disconnect between the head coach and the quarterback. And the quarterback in that town, they invested so much in him. I mean, in a sense, they invested the number 2 overall pick, the number 16 overall pick, I believe, was last year, and the number 2 overall pick this year, essentially, is what they've invested in RG3. Because now the Rams have the number 2 overall pick this year because the Redskins gave it away as part of that initial deal. So they've invested so much in this kid, and clearly his success or his happiness or whatever you want to call it was more important than the continuity of the coaching staff and Shanahan or whatever happened there. So as much as I respect Snyder for not asking your quarterback, your player, who he wants as his head coach, I don't understand it, because they've invested so much in this guy to not seek out some kind of input or at least have a sit down between Gruden and RG3 and make sure that their philosophies to an extent are on the same page, or that they can kind of just coach in harmony together, whether it be a system or a philosophy or a technique or a style. I feel like they should have at least, even if RG3 didn't have a say-so, I feel like the two of them should have sat down at the table together, had a conversation in front of general manager or Snyder, just to kind of see how the chemistry was, how the rapport was. That's not too much to ask.
I can see that. But at the same time, the way I kind of like the decision, the way I look at it is, as far as RG3's professional football career is concerned, he's like 3 months old. Who gives a crap what he thinks? They spent a lot of resources and capital to get him. But at the end of the day, at the stage of his career, he doesn't really have, you know, he doesn't need chemistry. He doesn't need any of that crap. He just basically needs to do what he's told and learn how to play football. It's like everybody else. You know, like, it's not, you know, like a veteran, you know, like we heard, who was it, Cutler? That, you know, got a say in hiring Trestman when Trestman was up for the interview. You know, I'd say Jay Cutler earned that right.
I would disagree. I don't remember whether or not he did or not, but I mean, I would disagree on Cutler. I don't think he's earned that, because he's had a history of making trouble for people in the past.
Yeah, but he's a veteran. That's my point. Like, he's a guy that's been around.
Yeah, but Mark Sanchez is a veteran. He's not getting any say on the OC, on the team that he goes to.
I'm sure he gets more input than you think. He may not get a direct sit down when, you know, with the coaching staff, but like, I'm sure he's having these conversations with Rex about, you know, who they're considering bringing in and blah blah blah. And I'm sure somewhere, and you know, figure the list of potential offensive coordinators is 15 or 10 deep. I'm sure, like, when it gets to like two or three guys, he at least spends 5-10 minutes speaking to those last three guys. Whether his input really makes a difference in the decision, it's a different story. But you know, I can respect not giving.
Right. And I can care. Right. I agree with you on that. I can care less if his input makes a difference or not. I don't think that the quarterback should have that kind, should have input or say so to a certain extent. But I think there should be a conversation. I think if you know who your franchise guy is, you know clearly that RG3 will be your starter week one next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, barring anything disastrous within his career. If you know that that is your guy and that is the centerpiece of your offense, you should at least have him talk to the guy that you're going to hire to lead your team.
But that's just the problem right there. I don't think the Redskins, to be honest with you, I do not think the Redskins are convinced that he is their guy and he's the, you know what I mean? Like, yes, it's only been 2 years. He's had a great first year, which we've seen lots of quarterbacks come in, have a brilliant rookie season. And then you have, you know, the infamous sophomore slump. But, you know, with him being going down at the end of last season and not clearly not being 100% this season, they still really don't know if he hasn't put in enough work for them to say he's our guy. So will he be their starting quarterback next season? I'd say 99% chance, unless like someone really impresses them in the combine, which I don't really see anyone.
Well, no, I mean, they have, if they don't deal Kirk Cousins, then they like him and they have him.
Yeah, so
I think they're trading him, but
I would too. I mean,
they need the picks,
but yeah, I mean, but based off of that, like, he just hasn't, you know, he's going to have the starting job next year. Depending on who their backup is, it will probably depend on how long he has a starting job next year. But I think he's there for at least a year, maybe two more years before they start making plans to part ways with him. But he just hasn't put in enough work yet for, you know, to say that he's their guy.
I don't know. I think that organization has invested so much in terms of 3 years of draft picks.
Yeah,
but the money, the coaching changes, everything that they've invested in. If he was to fail, if he was to hurt his knee again and shorten his career, or if he was to regress again next year, or hell, not even regress, if he was to just plateau next year and not progress and not be closer to what he was like year one or improve on that, then I think this can ultimately go down as one of the biggest failures in the NFL. I think this can end up being a bigger failure than the Chargers and Ryan Leaf. Not because RG3 is a complete bust, but for different reasons. For the fact that you put so much into this one person and you invested your entire franchise, your entire fan base, your ad campaigns, your promotions, you invested so much into this person, for it not to work out for you, I think would be a bigger disappointment than the Chargers just drafting Ryan Leaf overall and him being a complete bust and a druggie, whatever have you, and being out of the NFL quickly. I don't know.
Well, so I think in a case like this, what you do is you treat it like gangrene, right? And I don't mean the Jets, but
I know.
You know, when you see the sign of infection, you know, and it, before it progresses too far, you amputate, you know?
And that's why I felt like they needed to bring in a coach who is a QB specialist. They needed Mark Trestman, basically. Mark Trestman is in the inner circles, is the quarterback whisperer. He's the guy who can get inside a quarterback's head, who understands how they think, how to change mentality, how to do things. That's the kind of head coach that they need for RG3. A guy who, no matter what it takes, is going to get the most out of him.
I see you on that, but I think it's even a little bit more simpler than that. RG3 in this stage of his career needs a guy who's going to make him play quarterback, not running back who can also throw the football.
And that's the interesting thing about Jay Gruden. I heard a note, I believe it was on Mike and Mike, about Jay Gruden, that with the Bengals, he passed on RG3. Now, obviously, not RG3, on Colin Kaepernick. Now, obviously, that wasn't his decision, head coach, general manager, whatever, but he did not like RG3. I keep saying RG3. He did not like Colin Kaepernick because he was not a fan of the pistol, of the read option, of that type of system. He did not think it had a place in the NFL. He didn't want to implement that in the NFL. It's not his style. He doesn't like it. He didn't want it and whatnot. And so he passes on a guy like Colin Kaepernick in favor of your prototypical, your typical dropback quarterback in Andy Dalton. Now, part of me says, okay, great. He's going to get RG3 to play your typical drop back standard quarterback, which is what he needs. On the other hand, RG3 is basically programmed in the option, in not so much the pistol, but the option. So to have a coach come in to, and not even one. Now, this was 3 years ago. This is before the read option pistol really was implemented into the NFL. So perhaps his views have changed on that a little bit. But I'm a little torn on that. I'm a little torn on whether or not was a detriment.
So let's be honest here. Let's look at the history of at least the most recent, like, quarterbacks known for their legs more than for their actual ability to stay in the pocket and move the football, right? So you got to start with Vic, right? Yes, and he came in the league. The league was not ready for a guy with his abilities, to run and blah, 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 right? And what typically happens, right? You take that many hits, you get hurt, right? And as he grew up, you know, post-dog scandal, blah, 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 like, he became more of a drop back and pass type of quarterback, and when there's nothing there, then he takes off, right? Now, he was successful with that. That's how he got the starting job in Philly, right? And then what happened? The year after that, he started going outside the pocket again and, you know, trying to make things happen with his feet, and he starts getting hits, and, you know, bam, he's sitting on the bench, right? Look at Cam Newton. Dude came in and tried to do everything himself, always running down the field, blah, blah, blah. They have a ridiculous season to the point that he looked like he wants to cry after every game that they play. And now he sits there and he's looking down the field first. And then if there's nothing there, he'll extend the play. And what happened? The Panthers go in as the 2 seed in the NFC. Like the guy, you know, and then on the flip side, you look at a guy like Colin Kaepernick, like, the Niners are not having success based off of Kaepernick's offensive ability. They're having success based off of the Niners' defensive ability.
I'd say that depends on the game. Some games, true.
So, well, look, it obviously would depend on the game, right? If you outclass a team, you just outclass a team. There's just no way. That's just the end of it, right? But I would say this. Okay, let's put it this way. I believe if the Niners were to play a team that's pound for pound just as talented as they are on offense, defense, and special teams, and it's only up to the quarterbacks to make a decision, they lose that game.
Yeah,
because he's not that guy. You know, he literally looks like he literally, you know, if you look at his game, you know, 1-2 seconds, maybe 3 seconds in the pocket, and he's gone. It's not like, he's running laterally, keeping his eyes down the field, trying to extend the play. It's like, the first option's not there, second option's not there, goodbye.
See, I really do think that depends on the game. I think last week we saw that. I think he took off a lot last week because based on scouting reports, based on the game plan, based on whatever he was seeing on defense, that's what was dictated. And so he didn't hesitate. First read, second read, okay, I'm gone, I'm tucking it, I'm running. He actually had a read option that he kept it. I believe it was the first time all season that he kept the ball on a read option. And so I really feel like this year he hasn't done that as much. Now, some games he has, but I really think that's dictated on either scouting reports or what the defense is showing him on a given drive. I don't think his initial reaction is to do that anymore. I really think he's making a conscious effort to try and be more of a pocket passer. Now, you also have to remember he's playing the majority of this season without Michael Crabtree, without Mario Manningham. Crabtree is his security blanket. That's his Dez Bryant. That's his Calvin Johnson. Obviously, Crabtree's not in the same level as those guys, but that's how he is on that team. He's the guy that has the best rapport with him. So when you're missing that person, it takes a lot away. It doesn't allow you to do certain things on defense. Now that Crabtree is back and is at 100%, I mean, it's taking an extra safety away, so there's one less person downfield, there's one less person in the box, and you have more room to get out of the pocket and scramble and pick up those yards. So I really think, I could be wrong on this, obviously, but I really think that Kaepernick is doing these things as the defense dictates it. I really don't think he's going into the game and saying, all right, first read, second read, I'm gone. I think it's game-by-game decision or drive-by-drive decisions.
I mean, I personally think the dude has the IQ of a cannoli, but whatever. I don't know him personally, so I guess I can't make that statement. But I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. I should say, as a quarterback, I think he has the IQ of a cannoli, and he has the talent of a kid with, I don't know, he has a talent of a quarterback talent of like a 3-year-old. He cannot make all the throws. He cannot make all the reads, which is, I think, another reason why he takes off so much. It's not that he necessarily if they're going to give up 15 yards, if they're going to give you a 15-yard cushion down the field, well, yeah, by all means, take off with it. Right? If you get flushed out the pocket and then a hole opens up, you're already running for your life anyway. You may as well get a couple yards out of it. Right? I see, from the way I look at it, I think he gets surprised a lot. And when he doesn't know what to do, he uses his legs. That's the way I see it. I could be 100% wrong, but that's just the way I see it.
It's what's incredible about the NFL and about like styles and things like that is that two people can look at a quarterback and see two completely different people. Because I look at Kaepernick and I see the exact opposite. I see a guy who is over. If I had to pick a team, if we were going through a fantasy draft and whatnot, and I had to pick a team, he would be a top 5 quarterback in the league if I was building a team for the next 10 years. Obviously, if you're building for the next couple years, then you're going to go with Breeze and Manning and guys like that. But if I'm looking 10 years down the road, when Breeze is at the end of his career, Manning is retired, Brady's retired, Rodgers is at the end of his career, Kaepernick is going to be one of the guys that I would want. It's going to go Andrew Luck, maybe Cam Newton based on the way he's played this year, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, I think the guy is the real deal. I see a lot of intelligence from him. I see a lot of I see a strong arm. I see one of the strongest arms in the NFL, and an accurate arm too. I mean, yes, sometimes the ball will sail. Sometimes he doesn't make the right read. But it's his second year starting. He was without his top targets throughout the majority of this year. I don't know. I think Harbaugh really hit a home run with this kid. I was very reluctant coming into this year. I thought a lot of what he did last year was going to fade, and he wasn't going to have much success this year, and he did struggle a little early on. But what I've seen out of him over the past, I'd say, 3-4 weeks has really impressed me. Some of the throws that he's been able to make, the decisions that he's made, I think show a lot of growth and maturity in the kid, and I do think he's the real deal over the next 5 to 10 years in this league.
I give him – this is his second year starting –
mm-hmm. Third year in the league, second year starting.
I give him 2 years to his first season-ending injury. I give him another maybe 3 or 4 years until he's basically considered a career backup. I mean, basically, I give him another 10 years in the league.
Right, and I give him 10 years also, but I give him 10 years as a starting quarterback.
I don't give him 10 years as a starting quarterback. I give him maybe 3 years as a starting quarterback. Guys like that just historically haven't had long careers. It just doesn't happen. Very few guys that play his style of football have long careers. And the reality is no matter how much guys like that sell tickets, and you know, when they're healthy, they put up impressive stats and whatever, like, they don't have long careers. And I don't know. As a coach, as a GM, as owner for a team, I care about more about a guy who's going to, you know, play, quote unquote, the correct way. Like, look, you know, like,
I think he does. I don't see him scrambling first.
But it's not just about that, though. Like, also the way I look at it is risk assessment, right? All the rules that protect you as a quarterback that pretty much say if anyone does anything besides give you a broken nail, not only are they getting penalized, they're getting a fine afterwards. You lose all that when you get out the pocket. You lose all that when the minute you start going past the line of scrimmage. Like, he does it way too much. Okay. So think of it this way. The most successful quarterbacks in the NFL in the last decade have known to maybe average exactly half a yard a season on the ground. And those guys have those guys are guaranteed first year Hall of Famers, have ridiculous records. It just so happens that Peyton hasn't been lucky in the Super Bowl game, but they're all Super Bowl winners. You know, Brady's multiple Super Bowl winners and with a ridiculous amount of Super Bowl appearances. I mean, and then you look at a guy like, let's name a couple. Look at a guy like, look at Steve McNair, one Super Bowl appearance, right? Look at, which is a great game, by the way. Look at Donovan McNabb, one Super Bowl appearance, maybe?
One appearance, yeah. Multiple NFC Championship games, one appearance, one loss.
Okay, and then his career was pretty much went nowhere. Look at Mike Vick, never been in the Super Bowl.
Okay, over the last 10 years, there's only been, over the last 12 years, since 2001, Patriots' first Super Bowl, only seven quarterbacks have won the Super Bowl since the first time Brady won. It was Brady, Peyton, Eli, Breeze, Rodgers, Flacco. That's six. And those are all your prototypical drop back, never run, except Flacco occasionally. Those are your, even Rodgers occasionally, but not much.
And even Eli occasionally. Everyone in that list except Peyton and Tom pretty much runs when they need to.
Right. That's six of them. However, there's a seventh one who has made three Super Bowls and has won two, and that is Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah. But he's not. But
he's won two and been to three. The only person on that list who's won two, Brady and Eli, have won two. Obviously, Brady's been to multiple, and that's it. Peyton one and done. Breeze one and done. Rodgers one and done. Flacco one and done. They've all been once and won once. Brady's been several times. He's won three times, but he's won all those with good special teams and defense. And Eli's won two and been to two. Roethlisberger's been to three and won two of them. And he's the guy who, when nothing's there, makes something up and makes something happen. Now, is he healthy all the time? No. Is his career shortened because of injuries? Absolutely. But he's still been in the league 10 years already. He's still going to be first ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't buy that. He's going to get in. I'll give him that. He's going to get in just based
depends
off.
It depends on the year.
I say it this way. He's going to get in based off the fact that he does have the rings.
If he doesn't get in first year, it's because of one of two things. The rape charges and whatnot. Or there's somebody better. He retires the same year as Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, and so that person's on the ballot the same year that he is.
Okay, and I'm okay.
Those would be the only two things that keep him out the first year.
Okay, so back before we continue to beat this topic to death, let me ask you this: 10 years from now, 10 years from now, when Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Ben Roethlisberger retire, who besides the people who live in Pittsburgh are going to remember Ben Roethlisberger?
I remember who was quarterback before Roethlisberger.
Who?
Well, immediately was Tommy Maddox, but we all remember Cordell Stewart.
Yeah, but that was so long ago, though.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was, in the grand scheme of things.
Before Roethlisberger was Tommy Maddox and a couple guys for a game or two here and there, but it was Cordell Stewart. Immediately before Roethlisberger, the franchise quarterback, the long-term quarterback in Pittsburgh, was Cordell Stewart. But can you tell me who was the quarterback in New Orleans before Drew Brees? Who was the quarterback of the Giants? Obviously, we know because we live in New York. Who was the quarterback of the Colts before Peyton Manning?
Yeah, I forgot they were even in the league at that point. That's my point. Well, look, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I completely agree with you on that one. I'm just saying, like. Okay, so to some extent, it's a popularity contest, obviously, right? But I'm talking about just. I mean, first of all, we're not even on the main topic anymore.
If you win a Super Bowl, we don't remember who the last quarterback was.
Yeah,
we can go around the league, and I guarantee you, 15 of the team, at least 15 teams right now, you can't name. I can't name who the starting quarterback was prior to the guy who's starting right now because that person did not last long or did not win a Super Bowl.
Well, but there's also guys who've won Super Bowls that you don't think of, right? John Kitna.
John Kitna does not win a Super Bowl as a starting quarterback.
Wasn't he the starter for the Hawks when they?
When did the Hawks win the Super Bowl?
They didn't win that game?
No, Pittsburgh won that game, and it wasn't Kitna, it was Hasselbeck.
Was it? Damn, I'm so out of touch. Okay, but there's definitely one I remember, though, that no one remembers. Freaking Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer won, right. I know Trent Dilfer because that's the only reason I remember who was the quarterback before Flacco. The only reason I know who was the quarterback for the Ravens before Joe Flacco was Trent Dilfer because he won a Super Bowl with them. But there was also, it was Trent Dilfer and it was two guys that were there. It was Trent Dilfer and, see, I don't even remember. But it's like the Bucks. It's we know Brad Johnson won the Super Bowl with him because I mean it's the joke. But who was the quarterback in Tampa before Josh Freeman?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Between Brad Johnson and Josh Freeman, there were a couple guys, but nobody knows who they were because they didn't last long enough and they didn't win a Super Bowl. All right, let's get back to something relevant to this week. Titans, Browns, Lions, and Vikings are still without coaches. More than likely, they're still waiting to interview a lot of the candidates who are part of teams still in the playoffs. Now, Jim Caldwell, Ken Wisenhunt, and Mike Munchak are on the top of a lot of lists, either for head coaches or coordinators. Those three are former head coaches, many of which did not have a ton of success, so I'm surprised that they're being considered so strongly for head coaching positions immediately. I mean, Ken Wisenhunt has had great success this past year as an offensive coordinator with the Chargers, but didn't do a great job with the Cardinals. Yeah, he went to the Super Bowl with the Cardinals, but he also had one of the worst teams in the league with the Cardinals and had one of the worst experiences a head coach can possibly have in terms of the quarterback with the Cardinals. Caldwell had success because he had Peyton Manning, and the first time he didn't have Peyton Manning went 2-14 and then got bumped up midway through with the Ravens team who was already locked in the playoffs, so I'm surprised again he's getting interest as a head coach immediately, especially because the Ravens did not make the playoffs this year. Mike Munchak was fired a couple days ago, and he's getting talked about as a head coach already. And yet a guy like Wade Phillips, who spent a couple years as a defensive coordinator after getting fired, did a fantastic job, is not really being talked about. Whether he's interested or not, his name isn't really being talked about. Now, in terms of guys who have not been head coaches that are simply OCs or DCs, drawing a lot of interest, you got the OC for the Niners, Greg Roman. You have DC for the Bengals, Mike Zimmer. And you have the Cardinals DC, Todd Bowles. And then the OC and the DC for Seattle, Bevel and Quinn, I believe it is. Those are the guys who are really being talked about for the remainder of these spots. What's interesting to me on that is as much as we talk about a quarterback-driven league and an offensive-driven league, the majority of these guys who are being talked about for head coach are defensive coordinators or defensive-minded coaches. Outside of Greg Roman, Caldwell, and Wisenhunt, you got defensive guys. So tell me again why defense doesn't win championships?
No argument here, man.
All right. The Bengals lose again in the playoffs and show their true colors as the Bungles, as we always like to call them years ago. Andy Dalton is now 0-3 in his first 3 years in playoff games, despite making the playoffs in each of his first three seasons in the league. A lot of people talking about whether or not it's time for the Bengals to move on from Dalton, draft another quarterback this year, blah, blah, blah. Is he a franchise guy? I think that's ridiculous. I think he's your franchise guy. I think he's going to continue to develop and continue to get better. I do, however, think it's time for Marvin Lewis to go. In his 10 years with this team, he has a record of 90-85-1. So, yes, he's above 500. He has a winning record with the Bengals. That in itself is an accomplishment. However, many of those years are 8-8 years, 7-9, 9-7. He's just kind of like a 500 coach. And 90-85-1 is pretty close to 500. It's not like he's blown out of the water. He's never had a bye week. He's won the division a couple times, but he's 0-5 in the playoffs. Never won a playoff game, despite franchise quarterback Carson Palmer and now franchise quarterback Andy Dalton. It's not like this guy's had Matt McGloin starting for him. It's not like he's had Ryan Fitzpatrick starting for him. And that's not even fair to Ryan Fitzpatrick because I think he's a hell of a quarterback. But you know what I'm saying. He hasn't had just career backups. He hasn't had Curtis Painter starting for him. He had one franchise quarterback and then another franchise quarterback. And he's 0-5 in the playoffs over the course of 10 years. Is it not time to make a change at head coach in Cincinnati, especially because your offensive coordinator and defense coordinator are being talked about as head coach candidates? Zimmer's going to get a job probably. Jay Gruden already got a job. So how is it your offensive coordinator and defense coordinator are doing great, and yet your head coach remains stagnant and cannot win a playoff game despite 10 years in the league?
Well, so I agree that his tenure is kind of getting long in the tooth. I think he's going to have one, maybe two more years left before they decide to part ways with him.
And that's too many.
Well, look, it's kind of the Kevin Gilbride problem in for Giants fans, right? Like, on paper, right? I mean, like, oh, I shouldn't say that. Let me think about this for a second, how I want to say it. Okay. Just looking at pure, like, win-loss statistics, he looks like a really crappy head coach, right? You look at where the Bengals were as a team 11 years ago, and you see why he still has his job. Now, keep in mind, a lot of the games that the Bengals have lost over the years, they haven't lost because of necessarily they've been outplayed. They've lost a lot of games off stupidity, missed calls.
Off bungling it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, pretty much, right? I mean, like, the biggest one that comes to mind is that Denver game where, like, I mean, the game just ended so ridiculous. Like, they had that game locked up. And I can't remember exactly what led to the touchdown, but pretty much there's a bunch of guys standing around the field with the Broncos player with the ball in his hand.
It was like a tip. Like, it got tipped off the guy's helmet or something and right into the receiver's
hands. Yeah, I mean, like, you just – stuff like – they just seem to be on the ass end of the luck train, basically. Like, they never – they have – a lot of stupid things happen to them. And the fact that they themselves as a team, I wouldn't say they necessarily shoot themselves in the foot, but they don't have that aggressiveness, right? They're not one of those teams that will get on the field, stomp you into the dirt, and, you know, barely let up enough so that, you know, you don't look too bad. But they continue to play aggressive. They're not a team that can finish you. And that's one of their biggest problems. And two, the as good as Andy Dalton is, there's a difference between playing football week 1 to week 17 and playing football in the postseason. Right? Not just because it's one and done, you know, it's win or go home. But you have to think of it this way. Like, regardless of whether you're playing as the 1 seed or the 5 seed or the 6 seed or whatever you sit in the playoffs, you got to think of it this way. The teams that you're playing are the best in your conference for that year, which means – and they're playing for the same spots that you're hoping to get to the next week, which means the level of competition goes up exponentially, which means your ability and the things that you do – as a team has to the output has to increase to match that competitiveness, and the teams that don't do that lose, and that's their problem. They can't finish games. They can't put away a team. Look at what happened to the Chiefs. That was a freaking awesome game, but why did they lose the game? Because they couldn't finish them. They could not put them away.
It's a disaster.
I mean, and by contrast, you look at the traditional, you know, like, say all the crap you want about the Patriots. They finish you, and they finish you quick, early, and they let you know that you're good, and they just, like, rub it in your face.
Right, and it's one of the most disrespectful teams in all the NFL. Yeah, but you're right. They do.
I mean,
what do we say Monday morning when they do that to a team?
Oh yeah, look from a sportsmanship perspective, and like the fact that just by virtue of living in New York, you just hate the team just on principle. Yes, I agree. But from a pure competitive, I'm locking up my playoff spot. I'm gonna get myself another Lombardi Trophy. It makes perfect sense. You finish them early, and you give them no chance. That's why they have 3 rings in the last, 7-8 years. And the Bengals have been lucky to even make a playoff appearance. There's a big difference. The Lions have the same problem. There's lots of teams that look good and could put up a lot of points, but they can't finish a game. And those are the ones that don't have success.
All right. I personally think it's time for Marvin to go.
Oh, he's going to be gone within like a year or two. I give him that. He like, unless he comes away with a Super Bowl ring within the next year. Hell, unless he comes away with anything less than a conference title next year, I think he's gone. Not conference title, but a conference game Next year, I think he's gone.
Yeah, he needs a play. He needs a playoff win at minimum. I think he needs two playoff wins. Unless he has a bye, he needs two playoff wins. And that is a very good segue into my next point, and then we'll get into some of these games. The NFL is considering, and I use the word considering very loosely, because when they publicly state that they're considering something, they've basically already gone ahead and implemented it. They just haven't officially voted on it yet. Either way, for right now, the term that we have to use is considering adding a seventh seed to the playoffs. And this would only give a bye to the number one seed, and it would add a third game to each conference on wildcard weekend. So the two seed would play the seventh seed, and 3-6, and 4-5, and only the one seed would get the bye. So you'd have three games on wildcard weekend, and this would create, in theory, more pressure to get the top seed. So, because there's only one team that's going to get that bye, and if you want that bye, you want that week off to game plan, to get some rest, to get you guys healthy. It creates more pressure to win every game and to be the best team possible. I see the other side of that, and I see that it creates less pressure to win because an extra team gets in. You look at the NBA, and half the league makes it. You can be below half the Eastern Conference is below 500 and is going to make the playoffs because so many spots available. This past season was the greatest week 16 and 17 we've ever seen because of the battles that we saw for very few playoff spots. Teams were going to war up until the very last second to see who's going to make the playoffs because so few spots available. You throw an extra slot in and it diminishes the importance of every win. You can afford to lose an extra game or so because now 8-8 is going to make the playoffs every year for the most part. They talk ad nauseum about how they don't want to see 7-9, 8-8 make the playoffs. But guess what? We saw 8-7-1 in the playoffs this year, and we saw 7-9 a few years ago. And you throw an extra slot in, and that's going to become the norm. 500 is going to become the norm. Now, obviously, you can have tiebreakers and things like that in place, but you can't. If you want parity in the NFL, then you can't have 14 teams at 10-6 and 14 teams at 6-10, and then the other two at 8-8, whatever, just so it's mathematically feasible. If you want parity and you want all teams to be evenly matched, then you're going to see multiple playoff teams at 8-8 and 7-9 and 9-7. And that to me is the opposite of what they want. So I don't, as much as I'd like to see an extra game, more playoffs, I think it's going to diminish the importance of every win, and it's going to diminish the spectrum of teams within the league.
I agree. Let me ask you this. How does that work, though? I mean, does the one seed end up having two bye weeks? Because if it's seven teams, it basically means it'll mean two wild card teams and a wild card and the two seed would play that weekend, right? Which means you still have to play an extra game somewhere.
No, because you don't have the second bye. Only one team per conference has a bye. So the one seed has the bye. And say,
okay,
four plays five. So say seeds 2, 3, and 4 all win. The top seeds all win. So you'd have 1, 2, 3, and 4 playing on divisional weekend, same as we do now. And 1 will play 4 and 2 will play 3. Okay, ends up being the same thing. While for this weekend, for divisional weekend, it ends up being the same thing. It throws a third game in there for each conference on wildcard weekend. That game would... You can't put the game on Monday night because then you have a short week for somebody. So you can't do that. So presumably, what I heard kicked around and I think would probably happen is you would see the Google experiment. You would see Google paying $1 billion to the NFL for those two games each year, and they would be webcast.
That'd be interesting.
And that would be the experiment to see if that's the direction the NFL wants to take things, because you really can't fit a third game.
Well, yes, you can.
Not without them being against each other.
Well, for one, you can play an actual early game on Saturday instead of the first game being at 4:30.
Right, you'd have a 1, 4, and 8 basically Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, which whatever, it's not the end of the world. I don't think football fans would complain about that.
But what network gets that?
I don't really know. I mean, yeah, I see your point.
Because they're all paying. I mean, their contracts are set in stone right now. That's the thing. Is these contracts
it'd probably be ESPN or ABC or something?
Well, then
it wouldn't be ESPN. It'd have to be like ABC something where
they'd have to kick that contract a nickel because they're already paying $1 billion for Monday Night Football. You're going to have to pay more to host, to have the playoff game. It's written into the contracts, the games that you have throughout the season and your playoff games. And that's why I think that you'd have a new partner, that it would be something like the Google experiment to do it.
I can see that. I mean, I personally prefer to see the NFL playoffs change to a three-game series versus at least, you know.
Or a best of three, you mean?
Yeah. And just move the Super Bowl back to maybe like
June?
March or something like that.
Well, they want, ideally what I read is they want the Super Bowl to occur President's Day weekend. So that Monday would be a holiday and people would be off and they can truly make a weekend out of it and you wouldn't have the issue of people going to work the next day and school the next day and things like that. So
start the season earlier. Dump the two freaking
You dump the two
preseason games, because let's face it, the week three and four games, no one really pays attention to, and no starter really plays. It's week one and two the starters play. Week three, week three you get
week starters. Three the starters play and that's it.
And then week four, no one gives a crap. Right. Like, you know, the teams that are really struggling or don't really know what they're going to do will play their starters a little bit on week four. But generally speaking, the last two preseason weeks, I don't think anyone would miss. So you shorten the preseason, you start the season a little earlier, which means, you know, by the end of December, the regular season's over, and you get a three game series, you know, somewhere in there, maybe not for the wild card games, but maybe for the divisional and the conference games.
I don't like it. Football has always been just one and done, and that's it. And it's the premise of any given Sunday. That is the fundamental root of football.
Yeah, but any if you're trying to add more games to the season while staying within certain constraints, like the only way to do that, really, I mean, I would prefer to do that than to add an extra playoff team, because then, like you said, you know, in some cases, I mean, like the math, maybe it'll be like once every like 50 years, but there also exists a potential where, in, you know, like I said, as rare as it is, there's also the ability for like a team with two or three wins or maybe four wins to make the playoffs because they just happen to be better than everyone else in the conference that year at such a low winning record. Where right now the cutoff is pretty much about 500.
Well, 7-9 can make it now based on what we've seen, and the Seahawks did a few years ago. We came very close this year, 7-9 making it. I think realistically 6-10 would be the worst record you can possibly have and still make it, just because you have six games within your own division. And within tiebreakers and things like that, I think six would be the minimum to make it. I like the current format of 16 games and two byes and whatnot. I think that works because if you remove two preseason games and you add two regular season games and you create an 18 game season, then once again you're diminishing the value of each win. I have the same point with the playoffs. If you add an extra playoff team, you're diminishing the value of each win. I would be more in favor of removing seeding based or creating seeding based on record. And so it no longer matters if you win your division or you're a wild card, your seeding is determined by your record. So in this case, the Chiefs would have ended up with the 2 seed because they had the second best record in the AFC. That to me is a better way of doing it. And that to me is a better way of ensuring that teams are fighting for the wins rather than the division. Obviously they go hand in hand, but the importance of home field advantage and the importance of hosting games and being a top seed and whatnot rests in not just winning your own crappy division if you're in NFC East or something like that, but in having a better record. So I'm in favor in that, seeding based on record rather than division.
Okay.
All right. We'll see what happens. I'm sure there'll be some more news on that coming out between now and the Super Bowl and whatnot, so we'll definitely bring it up again on the show. All right, first game this weekend, Saints and Seahawks. Saints got trampled the first time they played up in Seattle earlier this season. It was a nasty game. Saints were outmatched. I think they lost that game 37-10, something like that. It was brutal. This is a team that typically is pretty awful outdoors. However, they went into Philly last week, played a really good game, a very creative game offensively. Sean Payton really did things that the Eagles were not expecting, and played very good defense against Nick Foles. Do they have any chance against the powerhouse of Seattle in Seattle? They're talking about extra earthquake equipment up there because of the crowd noise. Now, I don't know if equipment just means things to detect it and better measure the crowd noise and what it's going to register on the Richter scale, or if they mean like protection from falling debris and whatever from things shaking. But that was one of the stories that came out. They fully expect stadium noise levels to be broken and earthquakes to be registered because of that noise. Do you give the Saints any chance?
I've been wrestling with this question all week. And I still have yet to come up with a conclusion, right? So we know the story of, like, Seattle, you just don't want to play there, right? Especially in a playoff game, right? We know the Saints are not historically that good on the road. But at the same time, the Saints were on the road in Philly in a ridiculously cold weather game in Philly, and they managed to win. I don't know. I mean, I still think you got to give the game to the Hawks, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans comes away with this.
Despite the spread, this has been one of the toughest games that I've heard in terms of predictions from all the different outlets that I listen to and watch. I'm giving it to the Saints, and I say this because the Seahawks lost a couple weeks ago at home to the Niners. It was the first time that Russell Wilson suffered a loss at home in his career, albeit it's only a 2-year career, but still, first time that he did suffer a loss at home. So it showed them that they're not invincible. They are beatable at home. They're not this indestructible, invincible team. The Saints have got that monkey off their back in terms of winning a road playoff game. First time in franchise history. Franchise history, they won a playoff game on the road last week. Never done it before. Now, it's a very tall order to go to Philly and win, and then to Seattle cross country and win in the rain, in the cold. It's tall order, but I think with the defensive chemistry or the defensive creativity that they have with Rob Ryan, I think with Peyton understanding a little more of what he needs to do on the road and in cold environments. I think he showed last week that he's willing to drastically alter his game plan in order to put his team in a better position. I think that is going to go a long way for the Saints.
But that's not the problem, though. Like essentially the biggest problem with playing in Seattle is, you know, like, I don't think people like, listen, folks, like, unless you've been to a football stadium and actually you've been there during a home game and realize how loud it is, like, it's hard to appreciate. And you're essentially talking about a stadium that's designed to maximize the effect of crowd noise. And no matter how much you game plan, if you can't communicate, forget the coaches being able to communicate with the captains on the field. If amongst yourselves you can't make line calls, you can't adjust protections, you can't call audibles, your defenders can't adjust their, you know what I mean? Like, that causes all kinds of problems for a team. So no matter how much you game plan for it, like, you basically reduce to the days when there was no one-way communication between the sideline and the captains, and you're back to nothing but hand signals, essentially. And, you know, it's difficult. I mean, you're talking about guys, you know, essentially lined up 3-4 yards away from each other, cannot communicate verbally.
Nope.
I mean, that you like I said, unless if you've been to a regular stadium and during a home game and realize how loud it is, then it's essentially multiplied that by like 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. I mean, it causes all kinds of problems. Seattle isn't that good at home because they're that good of a football team. I mean, yes, they're good. But I think that's that sixth man thing, it just gives them a huge edge.
12th man. Sixth man will be basketball.
Yeah, I remember. I got caught up in the movie. I was like, sixth man. I'm like, wait a minute. Wasn't that movie with, anyway, yeah.
I think Wayne's brother or whatever.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about the crowd noise. I'm a Jets fan because the first game that I ever went to was a Jets game. And hearing 80,000 people chant in unison, J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 say what you will about the chant, whether it's dorky or not, it's still something. And hearing 80,000 people do it, it got me. And that was it. And I've been a Jets fan ever since. And that is why, because I went to a Jet. I wasn't a huge football fan. I didn't have loyalty or allegiance to any one team in particular. Happened to get tickets. We went to the game, and I heard that, and I was just so like amazed by the atmosphere. And that was it. And you want to talk about the TV experience and why it's better to watch the game at home than be in the stands and this and that? That's true. On a regular week-to-week basis, it's a much better experience at home. You can flip channels, you get your own bathroom, your own snacks, your computer, whatever have you. It's a better experience. However, if you're a fan of your team, if you're a fan of the game, you have to have at least attended one game to appreciate what it's really like.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe because it's just like there's like this energy that's just in the air like the entire game. You know,
if you have one of those teams. Now, if you're attending
Jacksonville game,
right? And I've attended a Jacksonville game when Peyton was still Jaguars Colts game when Peyton was still there, and it was a decent atmosphere. It was decent, but it wasn't anything that made me go home and say, "Yeah, go Jags!" Like there was nothing like that. Now, obviously, the Saints have that. The Raiders have that. There are plenty of bad teams, and I shouldn't have lumped the Saints in there. I didn't mean to, but there are plenty of bad teams that have great home field atmospheres and advantages, and the Raiders are a perfect example of that. Even the Browns, to a certain extent, are an example of that because the Browns don't typically have that much trouble selling out. But you go to a Tampa Bay game, and it's horrible. And for a while, you go to a Redskins game, and it was awful. All right. I give this one to the Saints. It's a close game. I give it to the Saints. Colts Patriots, another rematch. Patriots won the first matchup early in the season. I got the Colts winning this game easily.
You know what? I've been bitten by this series so many times. Like historically, the Patriots own this series by a lot. It's not the margin's not even close.
I think it's like 9-5 Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, and every time you want to pick the Colts to go in and dominate, I mean, let's not forget we're dealing with the mad genius of football in New England. And as much as I don't want to say it, and I don't want to see them move on to the next round, I think New England wins this game easily.
The Kansas City Chiefs were such a good defensive team. And had such offensive fire—I can't even say firepower—but they were just such a well balanced team. They had their home field advantage. They were winning and winning and winning big. And the Colts found a way, and Andrew Luck found a way, despite three turnovers, to come back and win this game. I think the confidence that he got from this and the coaching staff and the players got from that comeback victory and the way they handled themselves, I don't think they're going to let
the
Patriots.
Yeah, but here's the problem. That against almost any other team works. Now you're going into, again, home field of a team who has a great fan base. And by the way, it's not going to be too cold this weekend in the Northeast, but it's not exactly going to be a summer, like a spring practice.
Yeah, but Arrowhead's not. Kansas City's not the warmest of places. And when they played, that was during that major cold snap. It's not like it's going to be probably about the same temperature in Foxborough this weekend than it was in Arrowhead last weekend.
Like, I'm not saying that the weather is really
good. Oh, no, they weren't in Arrowhead. I'm sorry.
They played in the Dome. Because they won the division winners. Right. So besides the weather effects, it's a little chilly and it's raining. Whatever. The fan base, forget that. You're still talking about a team who pretty much lost just about everyone on the team that was worth even remembering their name in the beginning of the season. And they went in as a 2 seed for the conference. You're talking about the team where it seems as if the head coach is points to someone in the stands, throws on a Patriots uniform, and puts them on the field, and they come away with the career game. As much as we like to talk crap and about the Patriots, you got to admit they have a great formula for finding ways to win. And I don't want to see them progress to next week's game, but I have a feeling they're going to be there in the conference game again.
No, not going to happen. Colts got this game. There's too much confidence with this team right now. There's too much.
Let's give it to the Colts, right? Here's the problem. Let's give it to the Colts. Do you see? I'm kind of up in the air at this point, more or less 50-50 about the Denver game. But I assume Denver should have learned this lesson from the last game they played, and it probably won't be like utter destruction. But I believe they'll win this game. At least I want to believe they'll win this game. Now, if the Colts win, and assume the Broncos win, the Colts do not stand a chance of beating the Broncos again.
They beat them the first time.
Yeah, but they beat them the first time by one score at home when Manning had a crappy game. This will be playing the Broncos in Denver.
Which is not an advantage to Denver because Peyton is not great outdoors.
He's already disproven that. But forget
that. No, he is not.
Yes,
no,
he has. It doesn't matter.
He disproved that in early December. I don't care about early December. Okay, I'm talking about January.
Yeah, but okay. It gives you. Here's why it gives you an advantage. It gives you an advantage if for no other reason. Just the atmosphere, or lack of atmosphere in Denver. That's a huge advantage to the Broncos right away.
Who's the kicker for the Colts?
Isn't it still Vinatieri?
Yeah. I'm sorry, you can't give the atmospheric advantage in different special teams and things like that.
By the way, who has two kickers in the NFL record book? For the longest for the NFL kick record.
Yes, the Broncos, because it's their stadium.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Everything works in their favor. And by the way,
go into that stadium and kick 70 yards.
But Sports Authority Stadium, Sports Authority Field, like, I guess that's what it's called now, is one of those stadiums that's freaking ridiculously loud. The Broncos, the Denver fan base, especially considering there's no other team within like almost a 1,000-mile radius, is ridiculous. I mean, the closest team to them is San Diego?
Texas?
Maybe Texas. Or Arizona.
Kansas City? Arizona.
Arizona would probably be the closest team to them. So, basically, you have every football fan who can afford it and has the time within about a 1,000-mile radius of Denver. I mean, like I said, I don't think it'll be a blowout for either team, but I think the odds are definitely more in Denver's favor in this one, regardless of who they play.
We're talking about Denver and Indianapolis right now?
We're talking about both. We're assuming that Denver beats. We're assuming Denver beats San Diego, and we're taking your pick of Indianapolis beating the Patriots, having to go to Denver.
And that gives us the epic matchup of the Colts and Broncos, and we'll break that one down next week. I haven't given a prediction on the Chargers Broncos game yet. All right, you're taking the Patriots.
Yeah, I'll take the Patriots in this
one. All right, I get the Colts on this. Niners and Panthers. This is a great game just because I feel like these teams are mirror images of each other. It's two teams that have powerful running backs with a good spell back. It's teams that have good but not elite receivers. It's teams that have a very good and physical and smash-mouth defense that plays hard and physical every snap, doesn't commit a ton of penalties, and it's two teams that have a young and mobile yet cerebral, a young and mobile yet a good prototypical quarterback. Newton and Kaepernick can both stand in the pocket and deliver the throws that they need to and not scramble, yet both of them mobile enough and willing enough to get outside and scramble. So I feel like these two teams are mirror images of each other. The Niners won the first matchup, but it was like a 10-6 win or 10-7 win. It was a very low-scoring affair. So it's going to come down to which team screws up first or which team wins the turnover battle. This is going to be a very, very close game. A lot of wild cards here. You got Riverboat Ron, the way he likes to take some gambles and do some weird things with his team. And you got Harbaugh, who is completely nuts and does some weird things with his team. I'm really looking forward to this game. I think it's going to be very entertaining.
I want to pick the Panthers, but I'm thinking the conference game is going to be Niners Seahawks. It has to be. That's probably the best game that you can have at this point in the NFC.
I think either of these two teams, assuming the Seahawks win, I think either one of them stand a chance to go into Seattle and play and beat them just because of the type of ball that they play. But Niners Seahawks, I mean that's you'd have the game for the third time. They split the season series, and so you're getting that best of three that you wanted so much. I don't know. I give it to the Niners because of the playoff experience. I think the bye week actually was a detriment to the Panthers. I think that it kind of curbs some of the momentum that they had. They had this great, huge, long winning streak that they were riding. They won something like 13 of the last 15 games, whatever it was, or 11 of their final 12 games. Something crazy like that they won. I don't have the stat in front of me right now, but I mean, they finished the season on such a high note that I think the bye week is going to be kind of a detriment to them. They're going to overthink it a little bit, break some of that momentum, that a little extra rest, whereas the Niners are continuing to play and play and play. They've been to the playoffs before. They've been to the Super Bowl before. They're hungry. They need to get back. They want to get back. Obviously, every team wants to get back there, but being there before, having that experience, knowing what went wrong, knowing what they need to improve on, not looking past this game to Seattle because they know what they have in Seattle. I think the Niners have this game, but it's going to be I think it's going to be a very close game.
Yeah.
All right. Chargers Broncos. They split the season. Chargers won in Denver. Broncos won in San Diego. This game, of course, is in Denver. Chargers, I don't want to say shocked the world, but they backed into the playoffs. I mean, the way they backed in was unbelievable. They needed three teams to lose week 16 and all three lost. They needed three more teams to lose week 17 and all three lost. So you talk about backing in. I mean, they backed in as much as you can. They did not deserve to be in the playoffs, but somehow they got in based on all tiebreakers and whatnot. And they won the game. They beat the Bengals last week. Played a very good game. I mean, the Chargers actually looked like a legitimate team last week against the Bengals. I think they stand. I don't give them the victory, but I think they stand a legitimate shot at beating the Broncos. It's certainly not the 9-point spread that Vegas is giving. I believe it was a 9-point spread, but I mean, it's certainly not going to be that close. I think they do have a legitimate shot, but I still give it to the Broncos.
Yeah,
Because of Peyton. Not because of Peyton, but because they can run the ball and they can win despite it being cold.
Well, not only that, I think the way the Broncos get this game is because if San Diego's smart, they're going to do the exact same thing that they did the last time they played, which is pretty much keep Peyton off the field.
Right.
And I think the way the Broncos win this game is by basically doing the same thing and somewhere along the line getting a key turnover that puts them up in front. Like, I don't think this is a quarterback game. I mean, I don't see this as a quarterback game.
This is a secondary game. This is which team wins a turnover battle, which team returns a punt or a kickoff for a touchdown, which running back breaks away. I mean, this is definitely one of those some you need a spark to win type of games.
Yeah.
All right. So we're both taking the Broncos, but in close ones. Yep. All right. And then obviously we'll be back again next week breaking down the divisional games and then getting set for conference weekends. As always, again, follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast, and check out the website fifthdown.org. Once again, we'll be back next week with another episode of Fifth Down.